This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN? Oh, what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found — I am not a therapist — I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize, like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 431, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. I didn't make it true, playing by the rules. I come apart, baby, but now I'm fine. I'm checking troubleshooting, moving down the line. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 431. My name is Paul Montgomery. Joining me, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Connor. And Josh Flanagan.
Hello, Paul.
We are iFanboy and we like comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book they read. Call that the pick of the week. We talk about it on this year podcast, along with other books of the week, various other things, doodads. Before we get to the show, quick reminder / warning, this is a review show. We will be talking about the things that happened this week, and things did happen. Things happened. We will be talking about them. So if you're worried about spoilers, something you've got to deal with. But pause the show, come back later, and we'll have some fun. So this week, Mr. Kilpatrick had the pick. Connor, what'd you like?
Paul, do you have a toddler? Did you not tell us? Is there something going on? You seem a little tired.
It's been a day.
Josh, how are you doing? Sharper this week?
If I am, I don't know it.
Okay. You were a little off opposite last week.
Okay, you know what? Maybe this isn't the best place or time to do that. But I accept your...
This is a bad time for performance evaluations, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Let's do it now. Let's do it here. I got a lot of problems with you people. people.
So this week was one of those weeks in comics where a lot of number ones came out. In fact, 60% of the books we're going to talk about this week featured number one issues. So lots of new things to talk about. But the number one issue was not the pick of the week. The pick of the week was All-Star X-Men 25, which was the monumental 25th issue, which is always funny to have.
I got a little panicked in the email when you told us it said All-Star X-Men. And I was like,
oh, did
what?
It? Oops. Oh, like, it does. It says in the script, too. Oops.
I was like, what? Okay.
So this
is the landmark 25th issue, which comes out on the 14th month. So that's really impressive.
So, yeah. So what I liked about this issue, and this was a special, again, special landmark issue featuring a all-star cast of artists who we'll talk about in a second. But it was basically a little in between the pages one-shot story of the Beast having to contemplate what exactly it is he has really done by bringing these old X-Men to the present. And you really have to sort of put aside the paradox issue of, well, if they are always in the present, then they're never in the past, which means we never get to the present. The first, like, that's all stuff you just have to kind of let go in this sort of situation. And really just think about, okay, so now you've got these young people here, and they're all 16 years old or thereabouts. And you know, and so the person that confronts the Beast of these questions, we find out at the end, is the Watcher, is you know, asks some very interesting things, like, well, they don't have Professor X to raise them like they did, you know, in the real timeline. So what is that going to mean for someone like Jean Grey, whose powers are going to start getting exponentially stronger, and needed that guiding hand to keep her from going insane and evil? And even then, didn't really work. What's that going to mean? What's it going to mean for Warren or our Iceman? And I thought that was a really interesting thing to explore, because there are issues beyond just the temporal.
Maybe they're better off without Professor X. Well, things did not go so well under his tenure. So maybe.
I thought that was a really interesting mine to mine, little shaft to mine, or whatever you want to call it. Of issues, you know, what happens to these characters that aren't raised? It's like a nature and nurture question, right? It's like, yeah, they're taken out of their homes, their families are gone, their mentor is gone. How are these kids going to grow up now that they're not themselves in their own timeline? I thought that was a really interesting angle to take, coupled with the fantastic all-star art. And I thought some really sort of fun vignettes, especially towards the end by these indie creators.
Yeah,
I especially loved the Kitty Pryde Colossus story, and the Scott and Jean, the Scott and Logan BFF story was fun. The one pager.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my favorite bits. Some great stuff in this issue.
Yeah, and it's a neat device to do the bookend with the Beast, like, and his insomnia. It's a neat trick to sort of, how do you hide the Watcher? You know,
right?
Like, you have someone who is going to be revealed in the end as the Watcher, and the only thing you can really do is cheat it. And he's a bald guy. And I was like, is this supposed to be like a ghost of Professor X or something? And then by the end, he turns around and his head is much bigger. And so there's a little bit of a cheat, a little bit of, a little bit of a foreshortening or something going on with the perspective, or yeah, literally his head has to change size. But best to utilize the Watcher now, because he's going to be dead shortly.
Spoilers.
Spoilers for, well, we mentioned spoiler, but I guess I guess our jurisdiction is spoilers for this week, but future spoilers. Yeah. But
I thought this was great. I loved the two-page. I loved the Bruce Timm art. I loved the Scotty Young art. I loved the indie art. I can't look at the names because they're in the back, the other side of the book. But I thought this was a great looking book also, and I like when they just get to slow down and have a little fun with these characters. I really did love that Kitty Colossus story.
That's pretty funny, because it's this huge tragedy, but it's almost to the point of absurdity that how many missed connections they have,
right?
And then they start getting into things that haven't even happened yet,
right?
You know, like pregnancy, and is it mine? Maybe, or it could be Kurt's. And then she has a little blue baby with a devil tail, and so that's a little bit telling. And yeah, and then it just keeps on going. And you know, it's good commentary on just how, especially with X-Men comics, and especially with those characters, just how crazy the soap opera element is, and just the footsing with time.
If they ever wanted to put together some sort of primer on the X-Men, they could do that little two-pager stories like that for every major character relationship, and that'd be fine with me.
Yeah.
It'd be a great way to do it.
At first, I was like, this is kind of all over the place in terms of tone, and what are we trying to do here? There's another special issue that we're going to be talking about where we have vignettes, where it is in a sort of anthology format, and it does play to a certain tone and certain themes. At least this is linked by themes, I guess. And after a while, they were just so much fun that I didn't really mind that you're mixing some really heavy stuff with, you know, Alex Maleev art and doing some more like, you know, indie, like almost like a webcomic kind of sensibility, like quick gag stuff.
Right.
But it's all thoughtful comedy. Like it's not just, oh, Wolverine's crazy, he's got weird hair. It all is making a comment on the wacky history of these characters.
Right.
And it's fun to look at that and evaluate that every once in a while and remind ourselves that as heavy as everything gets, this is all pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. And this entire issue is about history. It's about, also there's some great Arthur Adams art in here. It's about the history of these characters and what you do when you change that history, what happens to them. And history is a through line sort of along with nature versus nurture of this whole story. And I loved the art. I loved the stories. I loved the idea of it. David Marquez did the framing device art, and he was great. I liked his beast, even though the design is still silly.
It's not his fault.
No, it's not his fault at all. No, but I thought this was really, really
and everybody has like a completely different take on that beast too. Just the same as they did with the cat beast before,
which tells me there's a flaw in that design. If that's the case.
But I also kind of like that now. I've gotten used to it. Like, it's easy to be like, you look like this in this issue, you look like this in another issue. I'm kind of cool with he looks different at all the things. You get to see how the artists do it. I kind of like that. I know I
get that. The only case where that's a problem is where they directly draw attention to the fact that he has gone through this second, third mutation.
Yeah.
Where it's important that his appearance has changed. So some consistency would be helpful. But this is a good take on that design, which one do you like? Do you like the original beast
blue.
Or the cat beast?
I like the original
blue.
Human beast forever.
We cover all the bases. I like cat beast.
Well, if I had to choose one of the blue ones, it would be the original Avengers, you know, John Byrne version. But I prefer him as a human. But this is fun. And I guess, Josh, you didn't like it.
I liked it fine. I didn't sort of love it one way or another. I don't know how I felt about the Watcher. I don't want to say that seemed out of character, because maybe the Watcher's done something that I didn't read somewhere else. But I was like, that was weird. Why would he do that? Like,
is the Watcher seeing the tie into the things going to happen?
Yes, soon. Is the Watcher just creepy like Bryan Singer's Superman? Is that what it is? Or,
well, the Watcher is just inherently creepy, I think.
He's always just there
big
watching.
Baby head, and
I know,
he
but it's weird that
people.
It's weird that like the line and you disgust me, Hank McCoy. I like the Watcher as a non-participant who is objective on most things. And if you pull that string too often, I think it loses the interesting thing about that. I mean, the fact is that when the Watcher intervened, you know, the one time it was Stan and Jack's, that's what I'm thinking of, Stan and Jack's Fantastic Four, right?
He's intervened several times.
I know, but like the first time they did it, it was a big deal and it made sense. And now it's just these guys keep going off left and right. It's, you know, it's less interesting now because that's what they do with them. More interesting if they're just there. I love the idea of the, like when they show the Watcher just hanging out in the corner and that's when you go, uh-oh.
Right.
You know, the thing that he'd go in there and tell him I have like a strong opinion of you, like he's disgusted, it doesn't make sense to me. I suppose. Now that being said, it was an interesting issue. You know, it was kind of cool to look at. I do. There's a problem I have. I really liked the my favorite part was Wolverine and Jean.
Yeah, that's good.
Life with them. They list all the names in the beginning.
They don't tell you who does what.
They tell you who does what, and I don't want to flip back and forth. Just.
But it's why I was having trouble describing the different story artists because I don't know exactly who each artist was in each story other than the ones who are really. I know very well, but yeah, that's a problem. Yeah. I don't like that.
I was
either.
Very happy to see Dan Hipp. I was like, cool.
Yeah, that was neat. Little mock-up cover.
And there was lots of cool stuff in there. I just wish I knew what was what. It's not even a page guide, which is annoying anyway because I didn't want to go back and forth. But that's cool.
Good-looking book.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I liked it fine. I wouldn't have made it my pick of the week, but, you know, I get it. It's cool.
Watcher's creepy. I'm glad he's dying.
I think about halfway through Shudder, number one, I thought this for sure is going to be the pick of the week.
So what happened?
Just the second half, I didn't love as much as the first half. Once they went to the present day, I wasn't as quite as into it.
You know, I've noticed a through line that is happening in comics now, that there's a lot of stories that are about dimension hopping. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them. And it's one of those things like, so what's this saying about us? You know, like in the 90s, everything, there was all the grim heroes and they were killing everything. And they say that's because, you know, the world was the way it was. And now we've got all of these dimension hopping stories.
We want to get the fuck out.
I guess it's really interesting. It's the comic book writers cry for help.
I think there's this combination of current physics and string theory and multiverse stuff that people, it's been in the news a lot lately, that the multiverse is theoretically possible. So there becomes more real, quote unquote realistic. But also, I mean, it's, you know, this world kind of sucks on a lot of levels. So
you've got Black Science, you've got the other book that we're going to be talking about soon, just to name a few, not even counting the stuff that happens at Marvel and DC, which is where that's sort of de rigueur. I just thought that was interesting that this is a thing we're starting to see. It's one of those.
So Shudder number one
is the new zombies
from Image Comics, Joe Keating and Leila DeLuca, also Owen Guiani and Ed Brisson. And this is another sort of pulp sci-fi story, and it opens great. There's a young girl who's the daughter of a family of the latest in the long line of explorers. And I love that whole scene in the house where you saw the little paint, all the pictures of them doing fantastical things. And then we jump to the present where she is not an explorer. She's a writer, and her father's dead, and she's in this crazy fantastical world where there's minotaurs in the subway and things like that. But
like chimeras, like there's all like animal people. Remind me a little bit like
Did you Batman? Just try to say the word chimera?
Chimera, sorry. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, Paul. What's wrong with you?
Okay, listen. First of all, that is an iFanboy tradition. Ron would do that shit all the time, and you're just going to have to take it.
It's usually the other way around, though.
I know. It hurts, doesn't it?
It does. So there's chimeras, and it's sort of like you know, Batman Beyond.
Why can't I think of any of Ron's malapropisms?
Rusty auto parts.
That was a stroke. It's different. Anyway, sorry.
So yeah, it's like you know, in Batman Beyond, they had it's sort of the evolution of Bane's Venom was, you know, these chimeras basically, where it was people who were crossed with different animals and, you know, like bull abilities and, you know, like a bear, like a part leopard or something, and that's just it's expressed matter of factly here. Mm-hmm. And the other cool thing about this is, of course, the art, and a lot of times people talk about a book. And an art style looking lush, and it's sort of overused. Here, I think that's an apt description of this. It's just, it's really lush and lively, and it's almost, I don't know what the process is here, but it's as vibrant as if they used markers.
I like the design of the world a great deal. Mm-hmm. I thought the design of the pages and the bit is you're sort of looking at their like apartment, their little Royal Tenenbaums sort of set up with all their little paintings and the way that, you know, like the rocket ship, and then their spacesuits, and then what New York looks like now. That was cool. I like that.
And that cinematic way of doing sort of like a credit sequence.
Yeah.
Because you're jumping around a bit, and you're looking at the wallpaper and head on, like in a Wes Anderson movie. And it's not Futura. Similar typography. But
I liked the idea of this family and the exploring stuff was way more interesting to me than what I saw so far of her as an adult. But
in the energy ninjas that show up,
yeah,
I didn't like that part as much.
But I did really like it overall, and I'm looking forward to reading more. Crocodiles in little Bellman's costumes chasing them through the tunnels seems more fun than the other stuff. But I'm interested to see where it goes. I thought the art was fantastic. So
this
was on the whole, it was a great book. I just wish we had spent more time with the other stuff, or the book was about the other stuff, because I thought that stuff's more interesting.
But I'm interested I like the character, and I'm interested to see where that goes, and if we're going to explore some of the backstory with, you know, with her dad and what, you know, what happened.
I'm sure we will.
And everything, and all the previous generations and stuff, and what exactly, why, you know, maybe the whole story about why she's running away from that sort of legacy. It's a good start.
I thought it was great. Overall, I thought it was a really great book, but I just wish it was a little different, which tells you how good it was, I think. Batman Eternal number one. This is the first issue of the new weekly Batman series that is being worked on by a whole bunch of people. Scott Snyder, James Tinney, and the fourth did this issue along, and Ray Fox and John Layman and Tim Seeley are going to be doing the writing. All these guys together are going to be doing the writing on this series as it's weekly.
What was the last like weekly thing that they did?
Trinity. Wasn't it? Yes.
It was 52 Countdown, then Trinity, and then nobody read Trinity.
Or yeah.
Okay. Feels like it's been a while. But then when I say that, I was like,
no, it's been a while.
It's been a long time. You don't even want to know how long it's been.
Okay.
That's definitely pre-New 52 stuff, so that's a long time anyway.
Yeah.
So Jason Fabuca did the art in this, and to me it just feels like we're already in the middle of this giant best story over in the Batman book to start a whole new one with, you know, a whole sort of game-changing, at least looks like game-changing from the very opening where Gotham is all fucked up and Bruce is shirtless and maskless and tied to this thing, and it seems like a lot to have to deal with at the same time.
It's like switching the channel over to another show that has the same actors halfway between. I couldn't pin it down. I think that's got a lot to do with it. I didn't really. I express my complete ignorance. I didn't know what this was. I was like, all right, I'm just gonna read this, and I was like, what does this have to do with? And now, like, it's a whole other story, and I don't know. I don't want infinite Batman stories.
It's very
that have the same. I don't want infinite Batman stories that have the same tone as the other Batman stories we already have.
Well, I was very excited about this from the preview that we got in the regular Batman series, sort of this little intermission, and it was.
If you recall, Josh, remember that was the issue in the middle of the Riddler story where we're in the future and Catwoman's a crime boss and spoilers back, and that was a prelude to this story.
Right.
And that was an interesting world, and I did like that, but it just felt like
it really it seemed
they should have
like,
waited until
to have cleared that. Yeah, and it's very it just seemed like a swashbuckling Batman story, which is something a little bit different, you know, than what they've been doing in any of the other Batman books. And I think they've been focusing more on the crime stuff and this the mythology of Zero Year. And then I open to the first page and Gotham is entirely on fire and it's in this really grim and gritty art style, and Bruce is shackled to the bat signal, it looks like.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It is the bat signal.
And
with the bat logo cut into his chest. It's I will take your analogy a little further, Josh, and say it's switching the channel to another movie with the same cast with a very similar plot line.
Gordon, just like Zero Year. It's apparently a big Jim Gordon story. So
the city's all fucked up just like it is in Zero Year. And
I didn't realize that it was a new thing because it was so similar to the other thing that was happening. I was like, did I miss an issue of Zero Year? Because it's the same names. It's Scott Snyder at the top. Like, if I want a different Batman story, I want it to be, this is Paul Pope's take on, if you're going to do a little Batman event on it, I want Paul Pope's take on it, or I want, you know, just a different thing. I want to see the Darwin Cook Batman story. And I'm sure there's nothing wrong with this. I'm not.
So do you mean it should be someone other than the current crop of Batman creators? Like that?
No, not necessarily, but it should look and feel different to differentiate itself both on the market and, you know, I'm not, you know, maybe I should I be better informed? Is that my responsibility? I guess, but you know, I just
better informed to what it was.
I guess. I just thought, I was like, oh, we're just continuing the story, and I'd forgotten about the other thing because those stories all came out 3 months ago, and I don't remember what happened 3 months ago.
Well, I mean, it doesn't take that long to get acclimated to the issue, but then so then you can look at it objectively and say whether you like it or not. So,
I know I think it's just a weird choice. To do at the same time that the other thing is going on.
I think that was my biggest problem with it. Other than, you know, it was okay. In terms of content, it was all right.
I would say that the art was a big barrier to entry for me, because like opening it up, and especially, I mean, it's a really striking image, and I was thinking about it, it's not that even if there was a different artist, I mean, that's such a heavy, you know, image that.
Not a big Fabuca fan, and I wasn't when he was doing Detective, and he's in the David Finch school, and he doesn't have the flair that David Finch has,
but
the shadow and stuff. But
it's a weekly thing. I hope that it maybe course corrects. I'm going to try out some more issues and see if it gets to that place that I liked you know, with Spoiler and that Batman issue.
Yeah, I just want. It just seems like a very different. Like, what is this Gotham City Police Department seems very different than the one in the other books. Like, very overtly corrupt. I don't know. It was weird.
Is this an Elseworlds story?
No, this is in the future. At some point,
they're just switching the. Yeah, I mean this is a thing that has been going on with the New 52 the whole time, is that we're constantly jumping around, and so there's none of the continuity, and I don't use that word in the strictest sense, I suppose, but like I don't know when anything is or where it falls on a map, at least to the same extent that I used to.
I don't need that at all. I just felt like it was so similar that was the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
If it had been really different, I wouldn't have had a problem with it.
I'm just talking my way through it, trying to figure it out, I guess. But
you've come around on continuity. You have that complaint more and more these days.
But I think I understand what Josh is getting at. It's not just that we don't know where it's set. It's just that everything feels like a new epoch.
Yeah, I don't have context for what's going on, I suppose. Like I said, I thought I was in the other world that we were going, like, and I didn't have enough context to show me that I was doing a different thing, and I don't know why we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the purpose is of like, we haven't finished exploring what we're doing with these characters by these people in the place that they're doing it over there, so why are you starting a new one over here?
Mm-hmm. I will say I really liked the sequence where in the beginning where he jumps through the window in the armor suit and hits and tackles the plane. I thought that was very cinematic.
There are weaponized pigs in this, and that's great.
I like him standing outside of the big armor suit. I could go for more armor suit Batman.
Yeah, that was cool. But
here's the thing. I was looking at Gordon, and he's the guy. Like, I didn't have context for it. I was like, well, which Gordon am I looking at? Is this old Gordon or is it young? He's got red hair, and I can't remember.
All Gordons have red hair now.
All Gordons, yeah, it's the new
right. Yeah, thing. So. Yeah, and that's me. There's just too many comics in my past, and I can't root it, so I know where I'm coming from, I suppose, sometimes. It's probably more my problem than anything else. But
So I really thought coming into this week, Flash Gordon, number one, would be a contender for pick of the week. It's from Dynamite Comics, written by Jeff Parker, drawn by Doc Shaner, colors by Jordy Belair, and I just thought this was very average.
I really liked it a lot. I'm surprised it wasn't pick of the week.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
I thought this was very average. It was one of my most disappointing reads of the week.
Huh.
I think the problem is what you just mentioned. There was no hook into it.
Mm-hmm.
I had no sense of any of these characters. And I don't mind you jumping to the middle of a story, but I should know something about some about them through the course of the story, and I don't.
You know,
I thought they did a good job of introducing what kind of people those characters were in the, you know, what was the prologue section? It's like a year ago or something, and then
yeah,
and then today when we go into the ship and we're, you know, jumping through multiple realities and stuff, and you get to see, you know, just the kind of daredevil that Flash Gordon is, and the, you know, Devil May Care kind of attitude, and you know, it's.
What's funny is that I don't know anything about Flash Gordon. Like, I remember when I was a kid, but I have not looked at it or thought about it since then. So, like, I know the words. I know the words Ming the Merciless. I know the words Dale Arden. But I don't know what it is anymore. So, for me, this is totally fresh. And at the beginning, you give your character archetypes. You get that. You get that the doctor guy is what's her name from Indiana Jones.
Marion Ravenwood.
Yeah. There were a lot of familiar things. Here's why I dug it though. I thought it looked fantastic, just straight off the bat. I really, really just liked the look of it. Jordy Belair colors and Doc Shaner, who I like, but I thought he really I think this is a lot better than what I've seen from him in the past.
Did you read his Adventures of Superman?
Yeah,
I thought Superman art.
I thought this was a lot stronger than that.
I mean, I loved both, but I thought this was great.
In terms of sort of like building these big alien worlds and the world with the giant trees and that spread, I thought that was really cool. I figured I kind of felt the opposite that you did, Connor.
Are you joking or
no? I'm serious.
It's cool, and it's fine.
I thought it was so strikingly good looking. And I love the circular panels. There's just, you know, great layouts in here, and it's that fun thing where, you know, we've got this swashbuckling character that travels through dimensions, and let's just make it this relentless chase. And you're hopping through different worlds. And then we get to this Arborea planet, which is this giant forest. And you've got, they're being chased by this giant larva thing. And they come out of this tree cave. And that's the problem. And then all of a sudden, it's like out of the frying pan into the fire. These blue archers in the opposite tree just shoot a bunch of arrows into it. That's dead. But now this is the problem. And it's a little bit like, I don't know, the Hobbit or Lord of the Rings in that way. You're going from one thing into the next, you know, exploit. And
I thought from an illustration standpoint, if you look at the comic book storytelling from the trees, when they fly into those huge trees and that big spread, and then sort of the way that they illustrate them crashing into the branches to the angles chosen falling out, and then him flipping all over the branches and things like that. I was super impressed by the storytelling too. And I also really I like how Jeff Parker writes dialogue and character interactions. It's just a thing I like.
Yeah, this is a real feel good comic for me, and I thought it was smartly written. And there was a lot for me to latch onto here, honestly.
I would also like to just say I really love Gabriel Hartman's cover.
Yeah, it's a good cover.
Like a hell of a lot. I do. I don't think it takes anything away from the interiors or anything like that. But
So when it came down to it, the second choice or pick was Daredevil number 1.50. Dumb name aside, this was completely unexpected. In that, I didn't even know this was coming out.
Yeah,
wasn't necessarily even going to read it until I read the description of it, and then thought, okay, I should probably check it out since it is related to this, to the main story. This was a flash forward issue to the time when Matt Murdock is 50 years old, although he doesn't look it in the book.
Not really, no.
Oh, he's healthy.
And so we get to see him in the future, what his life has become. And since it is written by Mark Waid, it does tie very heavily into supposedly what is going to happen in the next upcoming book. Although, you know, anything could happen.
So if Matt is 50 years old, how come Foggy's 25?
Right. There was some art problems. There was a few art problems in that sense, in that. Clearly, Foggy is
character design problems. I thought the art was fine.
The art in that it doesn't convey their age properly, which is an art problem. Yeah. Clearly Foggy is taking up a health kick after the cancer, which makes sense. So he is thinner and in better shape, but he doesn't look like he's 50 years old, even with that.
Right.
But,
at first, I thought it was like, oh, is it like Foggy Junior or something? Like,
So we find out that Matt has a son. Matt's powers are going to get more intense the older he gets. So he kind of sees.
He can see color.
Color and shape much clearer now. He's given up being Daredevil after his son was born. And his son has also got the power, but is terrified by it. So he basically never wants to leave the house or talk to or touch anybody.
I thought was
interesting.
I really, really liked the characterization of the kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I liked. And maybe this is a dad thing or something like that. I liked that the kid is scared of a thing, and Matt doesn't want him to be scared of that, but you can't make him not be scared of it.
Right.
It's a tightrope. He's trying to help him, but she doesn't want to push him.
Yeah. No. I mean, and like I've lived that. Like I thought that was done really, really well. And I don't even think Mark Waid has kids, so I thought that was pretty adept as a thing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what this was, and I actually. When you started talking about it, I go, shit, I think I forgot to read that. And then I looked and said, oh, no, I did read it. I did read it. I didn't read the whole thing. I read the main story, and then I started reading the prose stuff, and I was like, I don't have the attention span for this. But
That's where the issue sort of falls apart a little bit was there's an intro in the beginning from the editor explaining what the book is. And so the first story is again, Mark Waid related to the series. The second story is a Bendis and Maleev story, and the editor basically says, wherever this falls into your own continuity, that's fine.
Yeah,
like clearly doesn't. It's a weird story again about Matt Murdock getting married to a woman he saves from a bank robbery, only to have her murdered by Bullseye, which is much more in the vein of the tone of Bendis's book, and but doesn't fit anywhere, which is fine. It's just a story. And then the last one was a Carl Kessel flashback to this Gene Colan era, which was all right, but
There were a lot of issues that did like these backup things from Marvel this month. There's only a couple. I don't know.
But so if Mark Waid's flash forward tale is to be believed, Daredevil's never going to leave San Francisco. He's going to become the mayor of San Francisco, and then we'll all be wearing the internet on our eyeballs.
I'd say it's well worth it for that opening story. And
yeah, especially if you're reading the main book right now.
Yeah, yeah. And then if nothing else, the art is great on the other two.
I wouldn't also take it as gospel that this is what...
it's just fun.
Yeah, well, here's a good example. This is me not being hung up on continuity, but I have context for what it is. So that helped, I suppose. Yeah. I don't care if this is the real thing or whatever. It was an interesting story, and I knew where I stood with it. I knew where it was and what was going on.
I mean, clearly he's going to have Daredevil become the mayor very soon. But other than that, you know, I'm pretty sure Daredevil's going to end up back in New York eventually.
Why does Daredevil have stirrups? Or Matt Murdock does. Look at page...
Why don't you?
Page 4 of the... I guess it's because the future and that's what clothes will look like. Like men will have stirrups on their pants.
Oh, like the kind of spats?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Isn't that weird?
It's like her.
Why would you have pants like that? You wouldn't be able to take your shoes off.
It's like weird fashion we don't quite understand.
But Foggy looks like a hipster from the 90s. Like in his bowling shirt with a dog bone on it. Like it doesn't. There's a problem here.
Yeah, maybe the 90s are back in style in 50 years.
Yeah. Oh, I mean that's. I think that already happened, didn't it?
I really like the kid's bedroom with the costumes framed and the I'm Not Daredevil T-shirt.
Yeah,
it was a nice touch.
I mean, overall, like we're nitpicking, but I actually really enjoyed this.
It was a fun story. Really fun story. Mm-hmm. So head over to ifanboy.com/Amazon if you want to help the show. That's where you can make all your Amazon purchases. Maybe even more with the news from this week. And we get a piece of that action. A little bit of the sale goes to us. Doesn't hurt you. It doesn't take any money out of your pocket. Takes some money out of Amazon's giant pockets and puts it in ours and helps us run the show, buy equipment. We've been talking before the show actually about upgrading something that we need to upgrade and that'll cost some money. So that's the kind of thing that helps us do all those things and keep the show coming to you every week. So we appreciate that. And also, if you go to ifanboy.com/registration, that's where you can help the show directly by becoming a member, $3 a month or $30 a year. Or by just donating any amount you wish. If you're a crazy billionaire, you want to donate $1 million, we're not going to say no to that.
I would probably say if you have a billion, you should give more. Because you know Although, it's really cool.
I also wouldn't say that you're a crazy billionaire.
You kind of have to be to do that,
I would think.
But no, maybe you just have really lovely. Good piece. You see some guys who've been working real hard for a long time, and they maybe deserve a little piece of it.
Although, let us know ahead of time, because there's probably some tax implications we need to work out ahead of time before you
do whatever. You know what? If we're talking about these kind of dollars, we'll take care of it. It's fine. Don't worry about it so much.
That will work itself out, yeah.
Ifanboy.com/registration is where all that happens. So thank
Carol
you.
Just gave a thumbs up.
Nickels.
If you want to donate in nickels, we're going to give you Josh's address. Because he's got
please
the most square footage.
Don't give anyone my address. So, I have a family.
All new Ultimates, number one.
It's funny because I was really positive about this week of comics, reading them. But now that I'm on the show, I feel like I'm being the negative Nancy, but... I don't mean to be, but I thought this was also just kind of...
I didn't finish this. I started reading and I was like, oh, this isn't Bendis. I don't think I'm interested in reading anybody else.
That's exactly how
characters.
I felt.
I gave it a little while. You know what?
I read the whole thing.
Maybe I'm just being... And I started reading, I was like, it doesn't sound right. And I don't care about these characters otherwise. So, you know.
Yeah. What's Savage Dragon doing in this book?
It's a
green guy with a fin on his head.
It was weird, Josh, and you basically nailed it. It didn't sound like the characters. It didn't have the snappiness of the characters.
Yeah, and it's not like I love those characters so much that I'll read them whenever they exist. I read them because I like the way that Bendis writes them, and that's cool.
Yeah. There you go.
Invincible 110.
Very carefully.
Yeah, did you read it?
I know what happened.
Okay.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay, good. Invincible gets raped?
Yes.
In this book? And I don't know how I feel about it, but it certainly stood out.
Well, I think so.
I mean, and it was like a long scene. And I just thought, this is you're either incredibly brave or incredibly dumb. I mean, I don't know which it is.
So he gets dumped, and then he gets attacked.
Which I completely forgot about the dumping in the, you know, after what happened.
He probably did too.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've definitely got a big banner in my head right now going, is this okay? I don't know if this is okay. And that certainly makes it sort of interesting.
Well, I think what will be the test will be how it goes from here, what the story it does with it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's always a it's It's the
rape is the comic book.
You can't unring in a story, in a story about a character, in a long running story about a character. You can't unring that bell.
Rape is the comic book third wire, kind of, in a way, as it is in politics. And it seems like it's possible to do it well, but it's been done so many times now that whenever anybody touches it, it brings us ruin.
Well, I think I saw the pages in question in an interview, and they're clearly not taking it lightly.
No,
and
I
it's
don't,
important
I don't think
that so. It's like it's very uncomfortable to read, and they said it was very uncomfortable to write it. And
we used to, well, all sorts of things. Ugh, I don't even want to touch it. But we used to say that this book was like oh, if you really like that old Spider-Man kind of style, this is what you should read. And it's really gotten quite far away from that. I've been reading all along, and it was sort of a natural progression, so I don't think I noticed it. But this sort of goes. This probably isn't the same book that we originally sort of thought it was.
Well, I think it is in a way that it's just the story's got more intense. It's almost like the same arc as Harry Potter.
Yeah.
In that the story's got more adult and more dark as the story went along. And then I'm still reading it in trade, so I read it in chunks, and I went back and leafed through some of the old ones.
Then there's the idea that the Viltrumites are like a different culture. You know, right. They're kind of horrible people all around. It's like judging ourselves by what the Mongols thought was a good idea.
Right.
You know, and comparing ourselves on that, because it's impossible to do that. You know, it's interesting.
It can also be swept under the rug and people forget. I mean, I don't think a lot of people remember that Nightwing was raped about 10 years ago in his book.
But really?
I only know that because it was mentioned in that interview.
Yeah. People forgot about that completely.
And apparently Green Arrow as well.
I remember that one, but I definitely remember the Nightwing one. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Although with a book like Invincible, it's hard to, you know, it's not like a new creative can come in and say, you know what, let's forget about all that.
Yeah.
I think the point is that it could be something that would be like shock for shock's sake, Mark Millerism kind of thing. But it seems like he has a plan there and something that he wants to say with it.
Yeah.
So
for all his writing, I don't think Kirkman does that kind of thing. I mean,
no.
Yeah.
He does a lot of shocking things, but there's always a reason for them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. or at least an attempt at it. I don't know if it was a good decision yet. I'm not going to call it a bad one. It's certainly something I didn't expect to happen, and we'll have to see what happens.
Well, I mean, with The Walking Dead, that's not just like a lot of zombie flicks and zombie stories are. It's just about the gore. That's a survival story. It's more a survival story than it is a zombie story. So that, you know, maybe that's the game plan with this.
Yep.
Star Wars 16. Have you guys still been reading this? Was reading near the end of the run on it?
I may have dropped off.
I'm just reading Star Wars Legacy.
Is there a reason to read it?
Well, in this particular arc, I haven't really liked it. I think this is the third issue of the arc.
I gotta say, this whole thing crested with the crazy engineer on the asteroid.
Well,
and after that,
my point is that this issue, I think, it starts to turn the arc around. But the storyline has been basically that in order to secure the use of a strategic planet as their base and their clout and their money and to help the rebellion, Leia has to marry the prince of the ruling class of the planet. And so they go there. She's basically engaged to this guy, and they've set up their base and they're integrating their armies. And Wedge is trying to, he's trying to teach their pilots, and Luke is off doing stuff with.
Wedge doesn't try. Wedge doesn't.
Well, because they're being a problem. It's not Wedge's problem. I would never say Wedge is a bad teacher. Obviously, he's a fine teacher. It's that the soldiers are very problematic, and Luke is off on a mission with some mountaineer soldiers, and it's basically setting it all up to take a really dark twist where it's all bad for them. You know, where it turns out that these people are not looking to help as much as we thought they were.
I will not stand by and watch the good man's name be besmirched.
But the problem,
sorry,
the problem has been so far has been. Up until this point, it's been kind of, I don't want to say soap opery because it all is soap opery, but like when Luke found out Leia was engaged, he started sulking way worse than when he wanted to get the motivators at Tashi Station, and he started doing badly in his job.
I think that if you're writing a story about this version of Luke Skywalker and you're going to make him whine, I think that's a play ball situation.
It was like, right, enough, man. Like he turned that angst level up to 11 and... If there had been a can on him, he would have kicked it. And
I'm going to say that. I'm going to say that's in character.
Yeah,
Luke whining is fair play.
The other problem is the art has been in this particular arc. They've been switching artists off all the time, and his Han Solo and Luke Skywalker are really problematic.
From issue to issue, or just sequences within the issue.
I'm not even talking about looking like the actors, just looking like that general character model of Luke and Han. Like there's a way they can look without looking like Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill, but. I mean, if you can see these pages, the Han especially is just, I don't even know who this is supposed to be. Sometimes it looks like Christopher Lambert and from Highlander. It's just weird.
Yeah, I was going to say, what era Christopher Lambert?
But
I thought it was Lambert.
He's French.
Can we do it? Okay.
He's from France.
So are the Coneheads. What's the problem?
So
it's weird.
So Iron Fist, the living weapon, number one. This is one that I'd been excited about. I like. Yeah, you know, in theory, like Iron Fist, and there's, you know, that one Brubaker Fraction run that everybody sort of points to. But other than that, you know, where's the definitive Iron Fist run? I guess that's it.
Not this one, is it?
Happened on the show? Why are we so negative this week?
This is Kara Andrews. I like the art quite a bit. Problem, I wish he had a little bit more confidence. Not to fill up the page with words.
He's writing and drawing it?
I believe he's writing it and drawing it. And it's seeing the preview pages, the unlettered preview pages, I was very excited. And I thought that there was interesting storytelling there. And like, it looked, I don't know, it looked like manga in sections. Like it looked like Akira, the way he drew helicopters and stuff. And like a, you know, a dude in like a big cloak riding on outside the helicopter. And I think that's forthcoming, but there's these great pages, and I looked and looking at them, and then going back over it again, I was like, there's a page where it's, you know, he and his parents climbing up, you know, to Kunlun, and you know that there being this avalanche, and it's this great visual storytelling on the page, and you get these close ups of, you know, a panicked face of, you know, fingers slipping off the ledge. And it's just crowded up with all these caption boxes, and it doesn't need it. I mean, I thought that was sort of surprising from, you know, this being a writer artist that, you know, you'd be a little bit more confident in the visual aspect of it. And, you know, the pages look great, but I just think it's just a lot of monologuing, to the point that we don't really cover that much ground in this first issue. There's a great sequence where we're looking at three portrait panels side by side, and he's going through the motions of a date, and he's brushing his teeth, and there's no expression on his face, and he's in his clothes and he's out of his clothes, and the figure itself doesn't move. And, even though what's happening to him, sexy things are very exciting, theoretically, the whole idea is that he's apathetic about everything. And just leave that alone. You don't have to add, you know, all this stuff. And especially since we're rehashing, you know, the origin of the Iron Fist and what it's all about. And maybe it suffers from comparison to that other run, which was really strong, especially from the beginning. And I don't know.
So I want to, I was going to talk about Astro City. Now I don't know if I should. So I'm gonna start.
Just do it.
I'm gonna preface by this. I thought it was a really excellent issue of Astro City. I thought it was really well done. It's
I thought it was Astrocity.
I watched
Astro City.
I got done with it and I thought, God, Kurt Busiek is so good. He's so good at sort of just building all this stuff, swirling around and coming up with character after character and situation after situation that all fits within this framework, and it's great. But my question is this what this is now? Is this going to be like, here's the story of the side person who works among all these people staring up at giants? Is that what all of it is going to be from now on? Because
has it all been that?
No, it feels like it. I know that there was the woman who worked for, I guess it hasn't been, you know. I just feel like there's been a bunch of those stories. Like there'll be the superhero story, and then there'll be the assistant story, or like the woman who worked for the.
I mean, that's kind of what I love about it, right?
I mean, yeah, pretty... I guess it's okay. I think I might be wrong about it. In that, I just feel like there's been a lot of these stories, and maybe that's because they weren't before, and he's just gone back
years of those long, intricate ones involving heroes.
It's a good point.
Kind of a resetting of the world.
I mean, all that being said, like, I thought this was a super strong issue that set up a sort of really interesting idea of a person who works for a really busy person, because I've worked for a really busy person, and I thought they did a really good job with that. It reminds me a little bit of that first issue with the Samaritan, and where he, you know, was just constant going and going and going.
You've never been an assistant for anybody. This you'll see a lot in this issue. You'll recognize.
Yeah.
This was basically the assistant to Doctor Strange in this world.
Yeah.
How busy she is, but
with a lady.
But, did either of you follow the link to the letters page on his website?
No.
Because I always like reading the letter, because he only picks one of the month, and it's always a fun. He's and Busick's really good at, you know, that back and forth. But this letter was so long that he either put it as, I guess they're all on his website, but this one he just directed you to the answer on his website. He couldn't fit the whole letter on his website. The whole letter was like a treatise on it. And plus, so then of course his answer is super long, and I was just like, this is going to take me all morning.
Was it a good letter or?
You know what? I see a letter from somebody that's more than three paragraphs, and I'm probably going to tune out before I get started.
It was just interesting. That's all.
Like that somebody cares that much, but...
Yes. It was long.
Have at it.
A lot of suggestions. Those are the books of the week, and I'm sorry.
I thought we were really thoughtful.
I think we were fair.
You know, every once in a while this happens, and it's not our fault.
There was that weird situation where two of us were right about Flash Gordon and the other one.
Listen, don't – Josh was – let's just mention Josh isn't by name. It's fine.
Okay.
That doesn't make sense. Let's move on.
You read an alternate reality edition of Flash Gordon.
Those were the books of the week, and we're sorry. I swear I had fun reading comics this week. I don't know what
happened. I did too.
I don't know what happened. I apologize. So if you want to talk about any books we didn't talk about, please go to fanboy.com and find the comment section for the show, and we can do it there. In the meantime, we're going to do an audience question. This one's from James from Delaware. This one's not as long as the one that Kurt Busiek got, so thankfully. James says, I grew up reading comics with the art from the likes of Jack Kirby, John Buscema, John Byrne, George Perez, etc. The question is, would any of these guys get jobs in today's comic market if they were all just starting out, or were their styles assigned to the times? And if you had a choice, which current series would you like to see them draw? P.S. I know Kirby and Buscema have died out, but for the sake of argument, let's say they did.
If they were. That's really
that's
hard.
Very helpful to... P.S., James.
It's hard to answer.
It's hard to answer almost because at least the art today is built upon the backs of all these styles.
Yeah,
but...
it's like you're...
It's like saying would All in the Family get on the air today, and it wouldn't. But nothing that came after it would have gotten on if that hadn't existed. So
yeah,
it's a weird. You know, all right. You know what? Let's take it back.
Play the game.
You know what? I think the person who would be most, oddly enough, I think the person who would be most in trouble would be Jack Kirby.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, 100%.
I think that he's very.
A lot of fans style. Now don't even understand why he's
exactly.
So
and I can even claim to be, you know, I was part of that for you know, a certain point. And, you know, he's very almost impressionistic. I mean, it's not anatomically correct.
Or would he come in, you know, with his portfolio and be like, wow, this guy looks exactly like Diesel Greenblatt, who is that reality's version of Jack Kirby.
Yeah, he would, and there would be people who love him, but
artists would love him, but
exactly. Like he would be like Bill Sienkiewicz or something like that, maybe. Yeah. Or you know, just somebody like a favorite, like a cult favorite, but probably not a huge success. Buscema, you know, pretty straight up standard style. I think people would really like that it looked just like that How to Draw a Comics book.
I think he would fall into that vein that a lot of people put like Darwin Jerkins. Cook and people like that into, you know, sort of a old school style. Mm-hmm. And I think they'd have their fans, but for the most part, in terms of, you know, you wouldn't be Batman Eternal fans wouldn't be digging that.
It's really weird to go back and like, how would Jack Kirby do? It's like, well, he invented the style, so like, I don't know. That's like, how would the Beatles do today? I don't know. I think
John Byrne could get a job at IDW.
I think John Byrne. I think John Byrne could get work. I think his depending on what John Byrne we're talking about. Are we talking about John Byrne, Terry Austin, 80s, 80s and prior? Absolutely. That stuff is. I think that stuff is timeless and fantastic.
All of this stuff is Talisman Attack.
I guess it has to be in their prime because some of the guys are dead, so it can't be how they are now.
Well, no, I just there are several John Byrne.
There are different eras of John.
Oh, yeah.
George Perez, same way. Strongest George Perez ever? Yeah, I think he gets work, but I think that he ends up getting looked at more as like a almost like a David Finch kind of thing that rather than like a more cartoony style or something like that, you'd get a certain kind of book with it.
Well, I don't understand what that means at all.
I don't know what that means either.
I'm sorry. I think there's certain kind of fans who like certain kind of art, and I think that he would end up being I think that if he came on now to do a book, I probably wouldn't like it. But
yes, I would
in context that. of looking at what he did when he did it, that context means I do like it. And I know that that doesn't make any sense. But I could see
George Perez definitely on a DC book. I think his
absolutely,
style, especially right now, his style would definitely fit in what they're doing.
Yeah, but that's not a good thing, is what I guess I'm getting at.
I think for me it is. I think it's great.
I think Jack Kirby going to DC today, the DU is going to have trouble with the style, but he's going to love that he can get a guy who can do a daily comic.
No, Jack Kirby. This Jack Kirby would come back and he would learn from his own mistakes and he would only be doing creator-owned work.
Yeah.
There's no way that guy's going to go work for the
DC. But he can't learn from his past mistakes because wasn't there.
He wouldn't get hired in the first place. His only outlet would be creator-owned comics.
Yep.
There's no way Jack Kirby gets hired at Marvel DC now, and that's nothing. Not a knock against Jack Kirby at all.
It's impossible to knock Jack Kirby artistically.
I think, yeah. It's weird. It's a hard question.
I like the PS, really. Let's, for the sake of argument, let's say we didn't. God, I wish we could. I wish we could just say that they didn't die.
Right, let's answer a second question. Let's just pretend that they are alive and in their prime. What book would you like to see Jack Kirby drawing now from any book that's out right now?
So an existing book right now.
He jumps
on and does a run.
Existing title. He's the new artist. In his prime. It's going to be hard not to just pick their books, their favorites.
Yeah,
I know. Like, I'm like Captain America. I mean, but like, it's difficult. Like, in my heart of hearts, what would I want him to do? I want him to do some series. That's what I would want.
I know,
but
that's not the game. The game is what
I know.
Book would you stick him on if you were in charge of the company, if you were in charge of DC, what book would you stick him on?
Same. Are we saying DC?
No, but I'm just saying as an example, if you were either one of those company editors,
I'd let him do Superman without putting Kurt Swan's stupid face on it.
No, it's not Kurt Swan.
I'm just saying they put Kurt Swan's stupid face over Jack Kirby's work because they thought it looked bad, and I don't want to see that. I want to see Jack Kirby do big Superman. That's what I want to see.
Perfect.
All right, little depressed boy. Jack Kirby doing romance comics.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to call bullshit, but you got it right at the end there, and I can't go after you.
I would see John. I mean, it's hard to say not John Buscema on Avengers because that's what I, you know. But I would like to see. I'd like to see him on Fantastic Four.
I could see. You know, it'd be cool. John Buscema doing Batman.
Interesting.
Like a Neil Adams or Jim Aparo kind of that.
Well, let's tweak the question to be. It can't be a book they've done before, or at least known to be done before.
So Jack Kirby didn't do Superman. He did Lois Lane's or Jimmy Olsen, so it doesn't count.
That's fine. Plus, they changed his art, so that's enough. He can do it. John Byrne did almost every book out there, so...
He's not dead.
Angel.
Who said he was dead?
The thing was, if they're not dead. So that was only the artist...
No, that was just his caveat for those two who are dead.
Okay. Yeah, also that they're in their prime. They're not now.
Okay. All right.
So this is like 1986 John Byrne. Superman John Byrne.
Everything I want to say is Avengers because I just want that again. just put him on the Avengers. I don't see why he wouldn't do that. But he's done all the books. I was like, X-Men.
Problem. He's done all the books.
He doesn't count. It's hard to do.
All right, so you can pick any book. You pick Avengers?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite things he ever did was West Coast Avengers. So, flipping Clint. I don't necessarily want to go back to that. I'd maybe pick a DC thing that he hadn't done.
Well, he's done. He did Superman. He did
JLA.
He did Wonder Woman. Sure. 86 John Byrne would be good at JLA.
Yeah.
Paul?
Aquaman.
Good one.
That is good. Can I have his? I like his.
George Perez. So we're talking
okay, now
like,
that one's this is the hardest one because he really did everything. I mean, really everything.
What is Guardians of the Galaxy, maybe? I always liked his Thanos a lot.
Thundercats.
I don't.
George Perez is Thundercats.
George Perez is the he's the missing link. He's done it all.
Avengers Aquaman. Arena. I want him drawing all the teen heroes.
Oh, there you go.
And then it'll have like a sort of retro, cool, flashbacky kind of thing.
All right, I'll say Aquaman. Just the answer for all of them.
There we go. I'm going to go with Aquaman again. You can't keep. I'm going with it.
James from Delaware, thank you for sending your question in. If you want to be like James, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, and tell us who you are and where you're from, and keep your voicemail around 30 seconds.
I like James. Be like James.
Be like James.
It was a good question.
It was. And we were floundering around like morons. So that either means it's a bad question or good question, but it was a good question in this case. Thank you.
And, you know, 431 episodes, coming up with good questions we haven't really gone over before, or at least in a while.
Good point.
Pretty good.
Captain America the Winter Soldier came out last weekend, and Paul and I and Jeff Cannata from the many shows on the internet all talked about it for about almost an hour. It ended up being a long conversation. There's a lot to talk about. So if you want to hear that, if you haven't seen the movie yet and you're like Josh, or you saw the movie after the show came out and haven't heard the show yet, check it out. It's a good show, I thought. Great
movie.
You can
take part in the memes.
Take part in those memes that Josh is confounded by having not seen the movie.
Spoilers!
So check that out on your podcasting feed behind this show or find it streaming on ifanboy.com. And that's all we got for plugs right now. So in the meantime, head over to ifanboy.com to comment on this show. Talk about this week's books. Find all of our other podcasts. Everything's at ifanboy.com, except for your writing jobs.
Yeah.
We are not currently accepting applications for new writers on ifanboy.com, just in case. I just want to be clear about that.
We're also not looking for anything to write about.
Yeah. We're not even accepting them for ourselves.
Yeah. It's hot in here, man. Josh, you're up.
All right. Go to twitter.com/ifanboy or facebook.com/ifanboy to find out what the pick of the week is. I couldn't decide if I want to say power pick of the week before the show. And then you can follow us individually on the Twitter at Jim Viscardi.
Whoops.
I feel like I just found like some panties.
What are these?
CS Kilpatrick or at Fuzzy
Jim, if you didn't make it back, he'd be the new Philip.
I listened. I got to say, you didn't seem too unhappy about it. I'm just saying. Or I'm at J.A. Flanagan.
Also, we have to punish you for saying the Twitter.
Did I say that?
Yeah, you did. We'll find
out. I think that's punishment enough in itself.
You know what happened with that? I'll explain what's going on with that. A long time ago, Netflix had my favorite commercial ever with Paulie Walnuts, and he said, the Netflix. And I add it to all of the things because of that. And I understand it's become a meme, but that's where it comes from for me, and I'll try to stop.
Right. You sound like the people making old man jokes.
Like sports ball kind of thing. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. I accept that.
I like sports ball. I don't like sports ball itself. I like using the term sports ball.
I don't. It's a cliche.
Yeah, I know. Cliches are cliche for a reason. If you enjoy and cherish this sort of thing, you should go to iTunes and you should write a review for this.
I like that. Our review of our own show is like, it's good if you like that kind of thing.
If this is, I don't know. Better yet, tell people about it. You got some block parties coming up. Tell people about the iFanboy. See, I did it.
Oh.
Tell people about iFanboy. Spread that all around.
The problem is that every once in a while you're going to get a bad show. And, you know, none of us are robots.
It's not a bad show. I think this is a good show about bad books. Some bad books.
That
sometimes
makes it more challenging, but you know what? We're professionals. We were previously professionals.
Not even bad. Just
now obvious again, but still. We have been professionals.
At one point, our lives were professional podcasters, and now we're back to being these mamalukes.
Who are these yahoos?
We found the ham radio, and we're in the garage, and we're just having some fun.
I can tell you right now, if we keep going, it will be a bad show.
I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Josh.
Bye. You are.
Yeah. I'm Josh. Played by the rules. Come up hard, baby. Now I'm fine. Check the trouble, sure. Hey, move.